Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com, and we are on our way to Fort Worth, Texas for the 2014 Texas Association of Magicians. And the reason that we're talking now is because I'm in the back seat with Charlie Randall of H&R Magic Books. Hey there, Charlie.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing great, thank you. And in the front seat is Kathy, my wife, who is driving. You might hear her chime in from time to time, but not necessarily because, okay, no, don't give me that high sign. She's signaling something. Anyhow, she's driving because I had hand surgery yesterday. It's just, for those of you interested, it was just carpal tunnel surgery. But I can't do anything with my left hand here for a while, so no shuffling cards and whatnot. So she's driving, and we're in the back seat just chatting and looking forward to the TAOM. And I just wanted to talk to Charlie a little bit about the convention. Who are you looking forward to seeing?
Probably Steve Bidwell is probably be my guy I'm looking forward to seeing the most, just because I've known Steve a long time.
You know, you had hooked me up with him originally to be a roommate way back when. It was at a TAOM. I don't remember what city we were in, and I was looking for a roommate, and you said, well, I don't know if you know this guy, and he was in England at the time, and he was, I think, maybe even still in medical school, and he'd come over, and you said, well, you know, introduced me to him, and...
He's a great guy.
Very clever guy.
We first met him, oh, God, at I think an IBM convention, I want to say in Salt Lake City, and this has got to be 25-plus years ago.
Yeah.
And he'd had a trick in Genie, and... card under the watch, and I thought it was a cool thing, and happened to come up to the booth and wanted to look at some books, and we got to talking, and I realized, hey, aren't you the guy that just had the trick in
Genie?
And he started showing me little finesses and everything, and it was really cool. Got to be good friends, and a few years later, he called Richard and I and said, hey, I'm coming over to Orlando. I'm going to compete in the IBM. You guys mind if I room with you? Like, no, sure, we'd love to have you,
yeah,
help out a buddy or whatever.
Sure.
And that was the year he won the gold cups.
That's
so,
right.
So Richard and I was used to teasing that, you know, there's three cups there, one for each of us. he didn't go for that.
Yeah.
But anyway, so
that is your share of the your portion of the room, sharing the room.
So Steve's really not been around much to magic conventions the last few years. He's come to a few TOMs, but I've
seen him at the Mindvention, you know, in Vegas.
Did he lecture though?
No, he just kind of came to hang out and learn a few things. You know, he lived in
Orlando
for a while, then moved to Dallas, and was a performer and a magician, and kind of would promote himself then as being the magician who's more than a doctor, and a doctor's more than a magician, or something like that.
Yeah.
And now he had a medical career.
Now he's doing the
speaking.
Yeah, he's huge in the motivational speaking area and stuff.
That was what he was telling me at Mindvention one time, is that he found his little niche, apparently, because he was trying to do magic for doctors, but now they would rather hear him talk about medical things, maybe with a little bit of a magic as kind of a hook.
I know he throws stuff in, like he does memory, mnemonics and memorizing stuff.
Yeah.
He throws some of that in and everything and all. And I've seen him do a few little things, so I'm really curious to see what he's going to do here this year. And I don't know if it's just a show or a show and a lecture. And I told Marshall, man, we have a bunch of his old lecture notes. Grab those and bring them.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
He had great notes.
I remember when we were rooming together so many years ago, and he was fiddling around with this idea, something to do, it seemed like, with a box, card box, that had like an invisible thread or something with a folded card, so that you could kind of dump out the card in your hand, but then, you know, with your finger kind of flick the invisible thread or the fishing thread line, it would go back up into the card box or something.
Huh.
Does that ring a bell with you?
It doesn't ring any bells.
There's some little thing he'd come up with way back when, and I think he later put that out. I can't remember what the name of that thing was. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing him, too. Yeah, it's been a long number of years since we've seen Steve Bedwell. Kevin James is going to be another one. You know, he was kind of a last-minute addition, I think, within the last few months.
Right.
And I think that's really a coup, because he's traveling, you know, now, of course, with the Illusionists.
Yeah.
And he was just this last weekend here in Houston. You didn't have to.
I didn't go. Did you go?
I did go, and it was really good. He was promoting the Illusionist tour that's going to be coming through Houston next June, and he was on just the big, huge stage, completely naked, bare stage in Jones Hall that seats thousands of people.
I thought you were about to say Kevin was naked. It's like, I don't see that show. Sorry, Kevin.
Exactly. And so, what was that, Kathy? A what?
Whole different show.
Whole different show. That's right. And but he came out and did his bowling ball production, first of all, and then he did the guy, sawing the guy in half, you know, with the chainsaw and the walking legs and everything. So he had this that guy and the nurse, you know, that pushed him out and everything. And then they had, then he did the floating rose, paper rose. Yeah, is that right, Kathy? Yeah, paper rose. And then finished with Snowstorm. You know, filled the stage and had everybody gasping and oohing and aahing. I mean, that he was really the right guy. You know, had they sent Dan Sperry, you know, we were just with Dan last week or two ago, you know, at the Colon get-together. And Dan's show is interesting, you know, and I guess family-friendly, but there are a few things he does in the show you know, like razor blades, you know, from the mouth, things like that, that for something they're trying to promote to the family,
right,
would have not gone over, maybe not have sold as many tickets, you know, as what Kevin was doing. Now, in the context of the rest of the Illusionist show with Jeff Hobson and the other guys who are going to be there, it makes perfect sense, and he adds variety, and it is fantastic with what that he does with his portion of the show.
But, I know my daughter saw Dan Sperry. It's been a few years back, and she loved him. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Of course, she's young, so that's her kind of thing. Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Kevin
yeah.
Used a little girl, too.
What's that, Kevin? What?
Kevin used a little 7-8-year-old girl to produce the rose, and it was very touching, very sweet.
Yeah. Yeah, that was very good. And another one is Max Howard.
Yeah, Max is great.
I'm looking forward to seeing Max.
You know, won an Emmy and all that other good stuff and all, so I mean,
he has, he won a Tony?
I thought it was an Emmy.
An Emmy? This is an Emmy.
I thought it was an Emmy. Yeah. I may have it wrong. You know, all those awards look alike to me.
Yeah, I don't have any of them. Yeah. What's that? Yeah, Tony's Broadway, Kathy says. Yeah, an Emmy is TV. And for those of you in the UK or Japan or wherever else may not know, yeah, Tony is for Broadway performance and an Emmy is for the television. Well, anyhow, he is kind of like Bob Fitch as far as
yes.
being a director and everything. So. And he also does a great show as the War Magician.
Yeah.
Civil War Magician, is
yeah,
that right?
He and his wife, you know, they have their parts or whatever. Yeah, and he comes out as, I'm blanking on the name, but the Civil War Magician.
Like Stonewall Jackson or somebody?
Yeah. You know, Gus Rapp, his name comes to mind. I think that's wrong. But
no, Gus Rapp was that other.
Yeah, that's not right. But anyway, that's what he does, and he does it very good. And he's, you know, he's got
in character.
Yes, and he's got the theater presence and the voice, and
it's
great.
He lectured to us. Did you come to his lecture in Houston? Now that must have been 15 years ago or so.
I've seen him lecture several times. Yeah. Great lecture, man.
Very good. Talks about character development, and he was talking with me about going on a lecture tour sometime. And in fact, while we're up here this weekend, he wants to get together, and we're going to discuss that in 2015. So. For some of you cities who might be interested in that, that might be something, you know, later in the year that he might be coming through, and I'd highly recommend that, because we have a lot of guys who come through and teach some great tricks. We just had Wayne Houchin, which was fantastic.
Oh, that was a great lecture.
Wasn't it a great lecture?
You know, it's not what I expected, you know, because Wayne does the, you know, the thread thing out of the eye.
And he
just, that's not quite my thing.
Yeah.
And not that I have anything with it. You know, Ramsey did the pork beans out of the eyes or whatever and all. So, but yeah, it's not really my thing. So it's like, all right, I'll go, but there's not going to be anything I like. I loved it all. It was great. It was very commercial. It was a very good lecture.
Very thorough, and it wasn't confusing. Didn't have a lot of stuff, but it was very interesting the way he was talking about everything. You know,
he was able to routine stuff. Yeah,
yeah, the routining of it was just interesting.
Telly works a lot.
Absolutely. Yeah, very good pacing and very clear and enunciating and talk slowly. Excellent. Good job. But anyhow, going to have Max Howard hopefully coming through in a lecture. Let's see, I think is it Stoyle and Ectorina or somebody's going to be.
I don't know.
Change.
I don't know them at all.
Yeah, they. I have. I'm on their email list. I hear from time to time, and I believe I'm pretty sure they're a Quick Change group. Of course, Master Payne.
Yeah. Oh man. He's a great great storyteller, and you know he does little slideshow things and everything, and. He's a great column in Magic Magazine. Just, I enjoy his stuff a lot, so I'm looking forward to. I guess we'd see him twice because we do that old timers breakfast.
That's right. We're having the Order of Willard. Now, the Order of Willard is kind of like in the IBM, they have the Order of Merlin for those who have 25 years of membership or more. And the Order of Willard being named after Willard the Wizard, who toured, of course, throughout Texas and lived here. And several of his family still attend the TAOM. We have. the Willard Award and other kinds of things that are presented. Anyhow, that's going to be tomorrow morning breakfast, and he's going to give a special presentation to our group. And let's see, those are the only ones that come off the top of my head I'm thinking of that that I know. Can you think of anybody else? I think I have a lot of dealers. I'm sure they'll have probably 30 different dealers.
No, there's actually not a lot of dealers. We were a little surprised.
That's interesting.
I think 10 to 15 this year, which...
You going to be working with Marshall Peters at the
H&R? I will be working with Marshall at the H&R booth. And so if you're in the area, come by.
Okay, and Dick Hatch is going to be down
there? Dick is not. Richard's not going to be there. He always had a problem with TOM in that it's also the same weekend as his mom's birthday.
Oh, that's right.
And there was at least one year, I think it was in Dallas, if I remember correctly, we drove up to the convention, and then Saturday morning, he caught a plane out to Utah. I think it was his mom's 75th birthday, and maybe 70th. It was one of those, you know, milestone birthdays. And flew back on Sunday afternoon. And, you know, so he was there to help us set up, basically, and do some stuff Friday evening, and then help us pack up on Sunday evening, Monday morning. But the rest of the convention, he was gone.
Was not there. Yeah.
For his brother's birthday. So, yeah.
So. All right, well, after we get checked in, we'll talk with a few more people after we arrive and find out some other people who are going to be performing and just kind of hanging out. I understand that they have, I'm anticipating, they're having close to 500 registrants or something, I heard.
Oh, good. So I hope so.
Should have a pretty good turnout here at Fort Worth. It's always a good place.
You know, they're going to have that tribute to Art Emerson also.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. They are going to have a special tribute to Art Emerson. And there's supposed to be a lot of things for collectors. In particular, I understand that a select few, I think, 30 or 40 randomly chosen people get to go to Arthur Moses.
If you haven't been to Arthur Moses' house, that is a cool...
To see his Houdini collection.
Oh, fantastic.
For those of you who are listening to this, by the way, if you're interested in seeing some pictures or hearing more about Arthur, if you'll just go to the website at themagicwordpodcast.com, you can do a search, use that search engine for Arthur Moses or Houdini, and you can see a podcast that I have done in the past, but also some video and photos that I took. I was a guest at his home for a few days when we did the official Houdini seance a couple of years ago there. So it's fantastic. He's one of the most renowned Houdini collectors in the world. And so I'm curious, and I want to ask him how much of the Houdini collection that he was able to purchase at the recent Potter auction. Gabe Fiore's auction.
Yeah.
Did you attend that online or watch
somebody go? I'm not a huge Houdini collector.
Yeah.
So there was
you heard some of the prices. Right?
I did see some of the prices. Maybe I should be a Houdini collector.
I think about some things I could have bought way back when, but who would have known? You know.
Yeah.
All righty. Well, for now, thank you very much. We'll see what happens after we get checked in. Thanks a lot. That was Charlie Randall in for the Magic Word Podcast. Scotty out. Scott Wells for themagicwordpodcast.com, and we are now in Fort Worth. I have registered, and I thought one of the first people we should talk to would be the president this year for the TAOM Fort Worth, Mr. Bill Irwin. Hi there, Bill.
Hello, Scott. Glad to be here.
Thank you very much, or howdy, I guess I should say.
That's all right.
Because everything is kind of a cowboy-themed thing. You got everybody dressed. I mean, here you are, the 10-star, actually a bronze star.
Actually, that's a real sheriff's badge right there.
Oh, is that right?
That's it.
Yeah, I kind of like the guys wearing chaps and everything and cowboy hats and got the whole cowtown theme going.
Yeah, it's neat that everybody picked up on that. That's one of the fun things that one of our guys, Hal Hudgens, came up with. And so for today, it is a Western day.
Yeah, and now I noticed that you said you're going to be taking pictures or something around.
There's a room that people can dress up in Western outfits and have their pictures taken. So that'll
with
be
the
fun.
Western theme, kind
with
of
with the
thing.
Western theme.
What are the kind of surprises or what else is going on that you got this weekend?
Well, every registrant now has picked up almost all the surprises. They've got two CDs, one of which is a lecture by Arthur Emerson, and another one is a collection of 785 video or pictures that were taken.
From the contestants and
over 12 years of history from TAOM.
Oh.
So 785 photos of that cover 12 years.
Yeah.
Which was really good. And that was saved from slides. So that's going to be historical.
Yeah.
collector's item. And we've also got something else coming on today that everybody's going to be surprised with. We can't tell you what it is right now, sorry.
Well, you can tell me now because I'm not going to broadcast this till tomorrow.
No, I'm not going to tell anybody because we can't let one person know, and that's all
fair
it
enough.
Is. And but it's going to be fantastic, another collector's item because it's going to only be available here. And
well, speaking of Martin Rivers, we're having a special thing with him tonight then, too, because he's our guest of honor, is that?
He's our guest of honor, mm-hmm. and that's what the surprise is about. It's also with him, mm-hmm. and we're celebrating his life and contributions
so
to Magic.
This whole convention is in honor of him.
Effectively,
he's
we're working
guest
it that
of honor,
way.
I guess,
that's right.
Of, okay.
He is our guest of honor, and we're glad to have him.
How about registrations? It's always everybody wants to know about how you know, conventions are doing, and there are a lot of other conventions going on this year. What's the registration look like this year?
Going real well. I'm not going off registration numbers because I'm not even looking at them right now. I'm looking. We've hit our room rates. We don't have any more block available. We've got, and you know, everybody that's here is going to have a good time. We're going to have that's what we're focusing on.
And it's not too late. I mean, are there day registrations available?
We don't have day registrations.
Okay.
We've got everything's available. It comes as a package, and we've got seats over at Casa Mignana that are still available. So if you want to see the evening shows, whether it's with Master Payne, Dana Daniels, Kevin James, we got a couple new ones like. Dave Chandler, who's been doing real well up north, mm-hmm. and so we've still got those available at Casa Mignana.
And how can they get tickets for that?
All they've got to do is they can go to the box office. They can go online to casamignana.org. O-R-G. Don't do another one. There are copies out there, they can get the tickets there. We've had some people with some computer problems or something about their systems not going through that route, but they're being sold on Ticketmaster. You can probably use the keyword miracle, but definitely online with CasaMignana.org for most people should work. Also at the box office, they can walk up and get
it. I think I heard that actually you don't spell miracle properly for the code. You leave off the
E. You can
e,
have a discount code for 10% with miracle without an E.
Yeah,
and that's online through Ticketmaster.
Okay, yep. And so those tickets are the only thing that's available on a daily basis. But
right.
For those people, like again, by the time that I post this for Saturday, mm-hmm. there are going to be
still
a
ton available.
Of activities ton of for Saturday, Sunday, and Monday.
Saturday and Sunday are packed.
Yeah, and then Diamond Jim on Monday,
and then
a great lecture.
That's right. So and he's got a lot of time on Monday. So everything's today is a nice, easy day to go get started, but. Definitely, Saturday and Sunday are packed to the gills.
So there are tickets still available to register for other shows and lectures.
All they got to do is show up.
And we're here at the Marriott Renaissance downtown Sundance
Square. Yeah, the Worthington Renaissance downtown, right next to Sundance Square. We also have a special event out there, which is ESPN. So you want to just take a roam around Fort Worth? It's one of the neatest downtowns now in the United States, and you can catch up on the ESPN special events today and a little bit tomorrow morning.
On Saturday morning?
Saturday morning. Yes, okay. I was just checking my time because for the next hour, we got a couple magicians out there.
Oh, doing street magic.
They're doing some walk-around strolling magic, yes.
Very nice.
Yes.
Very good. Well, good. Well, I just wanted to touch base with you on the front end, and hopefully I can get a chance to talk with you afterwards when you kind of take a breather. I mean, I'm glad to have a few
wonderful.
Minutes with you right now, so later you can kind of tell me.
I'm rolling.
To meet your expectations and everything. So
It's exceeding much. Right now it's a blast. We're having fun. The last 2 months have been a blast, and so this
fantastic.
Is good.
Fantastic. Good. Bill, thanks very much.
Thank you.
That's Bill Irwin, president of the TAOM 2014. From Fort Worth, this is Scotty out.
And considering the room, my age and yours, and background experience, this starts in 1953 and ends in 1969. So canalize yourself there, and I think I've got this room engaged. The first one is in 53. By that time, I'm second lieutenant working in the radio company of 97th Signal Battalion, 7th Army, Stuttgart, Germany, and we're on field maneuvers out in the woods. And I've got a radio relay company, high frequency company, big 2.5-ton trucks, 400 watt transmitters on the back end of these things, 40 of the damn things hiding in a forest. You ever try to hide 40 truck, 2.5-ton trucks? Forget it. When suddenly it's in the middle of the afternoon, and a Volkswagen bus, which they've just retired from inventory, if you saw the news recently, after 63 years, the Volkswagen bus will no longer be made. There was brand new when this thing came together, and a gentleman steps out and introduces himself as a magician by the name of Bellacchini. It's time to pause. There are 13 Bellacchinis. One of them we've had here at TAOM. His name is Rüdiger Deutsch, and Rüdiger Deutsch and his wife got together. He's still alive as a famous magician in Germany and a manufacturer of magnificent, extremely expensive illusions. And he decided that he was going to take all this equipment that was copies of the old days and go and put them on stage. And he and his wife got in Prussian costume and marched on stage and did a Prussian magic act called Bellacchini the 13th. In so doing, he thought it'd be fun to go find out who the hell the other 12 were. And he took this as a project and he did it. So as a quick fill-in before we get back to the field exercise, the first guy was Samuel Belloc. And Belloc was a Polish Jew who decided he should add I-N-I to his name and become Bellacchini. That must have been very popular in those days because a guy named Weiss did the same thing to his stage name and they all ended up being something iny. This particular gentleman opened up in Portugal with an illusion show, gigantic illusion show, 1840. So good that Kaiser Wilhelm I of them makes him the court magician of all of Germany. So with that as a background, along comes another guy and says, well, if he's got that name, I'll, what do you guess? I'm Bellacchini the second, and then the third, and the fourth, and the fifth. You've got the idea. So there were 13 of them over time. The one that I had that afternoon in 1953 was a gentleman by the stage name of Arado Bellacchini. He was Bellacchini the seventh. And his real name was William Mann. And Mr. Mann had always been a circus magician, as was everybody else in the bus. And there's four others there, and here's what he'd like to do. He'd like to exchange, if you would feed the five of us dinner, we'll put a show on tonight for your troops. We made the deal immediately, and off we went. If you watched MASH years ago, you know what the eating tents looked like. They were large pyramidal rectangular tents. And the cooking tent and the eating tent were side by side, like so. And you rolled up the side of the tent of one and the side of the tent of the other, put a latrine screen in the back as a scrim, and they worked the show over there, and over here was all the audience and this one, and that's how the show took place. The other four people in his company was, first of all, a husband and wife. The gentleman's name is why I write things down. It was Giuseppe Valente, and he was a circus accordion and musician. He'd been the leader of the One Ring Circus in Berlin for a number of years. His wife was a circus clown. They had with them a young couple. Erich Stolz was a juggler in the circus, and his wife, Katerina, played guitar and sang. So we finish our field problem. We sit down to dinner. And during dinner, the elderly gentleman gets up and picks up his accordion, which is what he brought with him, and plays dinner music for us during the dinner. Okay, that was a pleasant surprise. And on comes Bellacchini, and he's going to do the first half of the show. We'll have an intermission, then a second half of the show after that. But I'd like to begin, and I see all the card routines, and we see all the billiard balls and all the rings, a pure manip act, until we get to the intermission. And the intermission, oddly enough, is the juggler. Erich Stolz gets up and he juggles, and we had to talk to him first of all. The juggling fire clubs inside of a tent is really not a great idea. He was distraught, and we were safe, and so he had to drop that out of the act, but that's how that went. But we're back to the second half. The second half will probably interest this room more than anything else. Bellacchini came out and he did everything printed in U.F. Grant's Victory Carton Illusions. Anybody remember those? Ah, of course. It was a marvel. What a great thing to have to troop with. You know, the war has only been over for 5-6 years. 47 was the armistice. This is 53. This is repatriation. The little thing that I wear on my chest is the Army occupation of Germany. So the war, as far as we are concerned, is still on. Repatriation is still on. And these guys are still trying to put the act together, and they're trying to work their way to Munich. And we'll tell you that part of the story in just a moment. But they worked all the way down the road, if they could, and encampments they'd find along the woods. And Bavaria, when we tripartited Germany at the end of the war, if you recall, the English got the north, the Americans got the south, the French got the west. So they're working their way, army by army, encampment by encampment, down toward Munich. So we get to the point where he's doing all the victory cart and stuff, and done it extremely well. And now everyone is involved. All five of them are the company working on stage. And that's over. And then he introduces the little lady, and she brings out her guitar, and then she sings something called Malagena. And at that point in the game, the evening is over, and we sat down and chatted. Well, please understand, in 1955, Harry Stanley brought Di Vernon to London. Prior to that, the British had no idea what close-up magic even meant. The term had no meaning whatsoever. The two people would sit down across a table and do magic for each other. That's unheard of. It's also impossible. I mean, you can't do it. You've got to stand up and have wings. You've got the passage. So we sat that night, and I said, well, I tell you what, let me show you the first trick I ever learned. And I learned it when I was very, very small from the man who invented it. It was called the one-armed gambler. And you'll find it in Stars and Magic. And it was far, far from what we saw yesterday afternoon, I tell you. That presentation had nothing to do with the one-armed gambler as Vernon wrote it. In any event, I did it for Mr. Bond, and he thought, this is fascinating, fascinating. I said, now, why are you headed to Munich? He said, well, you probably know that Potsdam used to be the Hollywood of Germany. It's now in Geiselgesteig, and Geiselgesteig is a little area outside of Munich, and that's where the film industry now, and to this day, is in Germany. And we're going there because the young lady has an audition for a motion picture. She has a contract to be in a motion picture with Raymond Burr and Scott Brady called The Mannequins of Rios. It's a lovely story about white slavery. I tried to chase it down on Netflix, and believe it or not, I found it. They had changed the name for television, called They Were So Young, and you can still find it on Netflix today, but the music items were so often were cut out and thrown on the casting room floor so they could fit it into a 47-minute program, so I lost that. But I did get to see that the lady got a contract, and she did a number of motion pictures after that. And you probably guessed the ending of the story. Her name is Caterina Valente. She became fairly famous. We still exchange Christmas cards. She's 81 years of age and lives in California. And if you have never heard her do Get Malagueña, you know, you've missed a marvelous evening. But anyway, this was an odd acquaintance with this guy. Comes in one night, does a one-night stand. Got to see U.F. Grant, victory carton illusions, and goes off the next day down to Munich. End of snapshot number one. Snapshot number two. Snapshot number two is 1961. Some idiot decides to send me to Fort Huachuca, Arizona. Has anyone ever heard or been to Fort Huachuca, Arizona? I'm sorry to hear that. Have you been there?
Yes.
Have you? Oh, God bless you. Hour and a half south of Tucson, 15 miles from Nogales on the Mexican border, on a strip of sand that the Signal Corps, for some ungodly reason, wanted for research and development days. I was sent down there to look at some stupid project in R&D called avionics. Some dumb son of a bitch has decided we're going to take gliders, we're going to put a motor on them, and we're going to control them from the ground. All right? And this is, you know, something a Signal Corps will really love. I wrote my report up in 1.5 sheets of paper saying this. And so in any event, the only two things I got into that 3-day stay in Fort Huachuca was, first of all, I learned vodka gimlets. A marvelous find, and thoroughly enjoyed that. And I'm walking down past the Base Theater the second night, and there on the marquee it says Kalanag. I said, it can't be. somebody's done Bellachini the 13th all over again and stolen the name. And so in I go, and it is indeed Helmut Schreiber. And Herr Schreiber has been allowed to come to this country on a State Department exchange, but he must do three isolated, I love this, isolated camp shows. What would you, was one of the three of you out there. We sure as hell qualified. Now the show had been greatly reduced. He had the largest show. Well, let's go back a step. Helmut Schreiber, back when the headquarters for German film was in Potsdam, had already done 120 films as either actor, director, or producer of motion pictures. He'd been an amateur magician all of his life, and he met a buddy. He said, "You know, we got something I think you might like to do. We're looking for a magician on an aircraft. And how would you like to take the job over? Because the guy that we hired, I'm sorry, after 1 week we fired him." So for the next 2 years, he was the magician on the Graf Zeppelin.
Oh,
from Germany to South America, once a month, and back again. And that's where he started doing magic every month, and decided by the time the war ends, and the film industry was not about to resuscitate rapidly, it's time to open up a magic show. And he does. And he pushed together by late 47, just signed the armistice. Late 47, he has the largest magic show in all of Europe. And he troops it for years. Now, there's some good news and bad news there as far as the State Department is concerned, because they have a record of him doing the Christmas party in 1938 at Hermann Göring's home. And the boss was in the audience. And they were not too thrilled with Helmut and some of his associations in the past. But he applied, as I say, this is 1961, to the State Department to come over. The show had been greatly reduced. Gloria DeVos had for years been his wife and assistant. This great story, only in Europe can this happen. He divorces the wife, hires his mistress, and she takes the job, and both ladies work the show. I'm sorry, that's Catholic kids don't understand that. In any event.
That's awesome.
They
were both.
Forget about
it, Michael. No, you're quite right. It was only Mae West who said, only too much of a good thing is marvelous. But even so, they are both on the show, and both very charming. And Schreiber is very interested. I don't find out until some years later at TAOM how much he appreciated anybody coming backstage that night and talking to him, because no magician in his tour would even talk to him. The Americans had shunned him entirely. They didn't want to be around him, they didn't want to talk to him, and that's how it was, and that's...
He was German.
Yeah. He was a Third Reich.
They called him a Nazi.
Oh, absolutely. So, I'm surprised that the State Department let him in, and we found out, again, this is 61, he's got to leave tonight back to go back to Tucson, so we can only talk for about an hour or so. He shows me the stage and the ladies, and we sit and we chat, and he says, "I don't have anything with me anymore, but here, you take that home with you, and run that around the room." This was his little advertising photo.
Yeah, that's good.
But he used to love to have the cowboy hat on, and he still had the cowboy hat on in those days. And Bill, just to your front next to that blue bag is a glass. And I take a look at the glass and pass it around, because I get that glass 3 years later. Now, when he leaves Tucson, he goes to John Hopkins University. And John Hopkins is why he's in the country. He's dying of diabetes. He has 2 years left to live. He dies in 1963, back in his home in a little town outside of Stuttgart. He sells the show to Klingsor. Now, Claude Isbeck came to TAOM, lectured, and did the show years ago. And then they wanted to know, is there someone here by the name of Arthur Emerson? And they find me, and he said, we have a gift for you. You were very kind to an old man. Want to send it back that away? Yes. You were very kind to an old man that he never forgot that you came backstage in some place down in Arizona and saw his show and chatted with him, and he wanted you to have, when he died, in his will was to put out a memorial glass, and that's the glass. And so Claude Isbeck presents me with the glass, as you're going to see it, and it has on the bottom, you'll see, his dates of birth and death. And chance encounters of people in the middle of a very odd desert in Tucson, no. Little Silver? No. Silver Springs. Sulphur Springs.
Sulphur
Springs. Gorgeous town. 23 people on the sand road. I have an idiot friend of mine who actually ran for mayor of it and became the mayor of that town when they finally incorporated it. Double magician that had no sense whatsoever. The Klingsor show and the Kalanag show goes on to the Folies Bergère in Paris. And so the Klingsor show, and he admits that he's doing Kalanag. He's doing a crossover, admitting that the show you're going to see used to be Kalanag's show and now I'm presenting it. And he did it at the Folies Bergère for 2 years before he dropped the Kalanag attribution and goes on as Klingsor to do one of the worst fisms we ever attended. Kalanag, incidentally, is a name that came out of Rudyard Kipling's Jungle Book. And Helmut Schreiber stole the name of the big black elephant, was Kalanag, put the A in the middle and became Kalanag, and that's the end of that story. End of the second snapshot. Third snapshot. I've got a nice cushy job. It's my last assignment before I retire after 20 years in the military. Combat Developments Command, Fort Belvoir, Virginia. The family's got house quarters. Got it made. Got a desk, and it's going to be quiet. Until one day. General Forsythe calls me down. He says, you know, Emerson, how the hell can we write the Army of 2000 when we don't know what the hell's going on in Vietnam? I'm going to send you over there for a year. Whoops. Thanks, Bob. I'm going to send you over there for a year as my liaison officer to General Westmoreland. So over I go. Now, please understand, when I get there, the commanding signal officer for all of Vietnam on Westmoreland staff is a magician. If you know this gentleman, please come and tell me what you know, because I've never come across him again. Lieutenant General Thomas Matthew Rienzi, R-I-E-N-Z-I. And General Rienzi was a good friend. Huh? He would often in the afternoon pick up the phone and say, Arthur, take off your barracks and we'll go out and work the hospital ship. So the USHS hospital ship Hope was docked just off the coast, and you pulled your brass and you went out there and you worked the wards or you worked whatever. And we did that 3 or 4 times. And that was great fun and very nice. And he was instrumental in getting me something that breaks the Army's first rule. Now, I was an enlisted man for a year and a half, went to OCS, got commissioned, and the second day in the military, I got the first rule. Your mouth shut, your bowels open, and never volunteer. That was it. That lasted me for 20 years, we're just fine, and until the phone rings and says, Emerson, it's Rienzi. I want you to go to India and cut the ribbon at the first Indian Army Signal School in a town called Bhopal in the Madhya Pradesh province, and do the usual welcoming ceremonies, get drunk and go home. And I said, you know, General, that's lovely of you, sir, thank you. But I really, he said, that, you don't understand. That's the site of the second All India Magic Convention on the same weekend. And I tell you, I'll make a deal with you. You can stay as long as you want over there on TDY. If you want to go tour around and see India, do it on me. But for God's sake, go cut the damn ribbon. Off we go. We cut the ribbon. Ron Haynes, as president of the IBM, international president of the IBM, had been to the first All India Magic Convention, and he and Beth Lyman and their wives did the first one. And he was lobbying with them, and before Betty Jo got to do all of our Emerson and West printing on the cards, Ron Haynes did the original long runs of Color Monty. And he's after me. He said, Arthur, if you're going to ever find yourself over there in Vietnam, get to India and go to that second All India Magic Congress. He says, that's marvelous. Sorkar's an amazing man. Got to go see him. And, you know, it's a fat chance. My fat chance came along. I find myself flown over there, put into a gorgeous hotel. All one story, all done with rooms with patios outside in banana tree foliage. They are gorgeous. American Express, $22 a night. And that was a game. And so I finally get to go up there, and we cut the ribbon, and we drank the, since they don't drink anything except warm Coca-Cola. I haven't drank Coke in years after that experience. I'm sorry. And then we go down the site and see Sorkar coming in. Well, I got there ahead, and there was one other Caucasian beside myself in this, and he was an engineer, because Bhopal, India, is where Union Carbide had their headquarters at the time. Gary became a very famous court case because we have a horrible accident that occurs in Bhopal, and don't go back there. In any event, at this time they were upgilant, they were acceptable, and so the engineer and myself are the two guys that are welcomed royally by Sorkar's staff, because he hasn't quite gotten there yet, because the attendees, and there are 125 attendees coming in by train. Now, you've all seen pictures of the train. They're hanging on the roof, the sides, the walls. When India built the train system, the government built the tracks and the cars, but not the chairs. So they sold the chairs to Scott. Now he can rent the chairs or sell the chairs out for people to sit inside the car. But the rest of it is free government property. The roof, the sides, and all the rest of it. And that's why to this day you find people riding trains in India more outside than inside. They are too cheap to buy a chair from Scott. They arrive, they set up, and their price of admission, I love this, every one of them had to get up on stage and do their best trick. That was the cost of the money to attend. And God bless this poor man. Sorkar sits in the first row for 4.5 hours, watching 125 magicians all do their best trick. And guess what? Their best trick was a dye box. We saw 125 dye boxes done on Infinitum and Eternum. And when it was over, he finally says, we have a guest with us from America. Arthur, would you like to perform? I sat up there. All I had to do was the old Insight pen that we sold was a magician's cueing pen. And I got to do Insight, God bless. I got to do Insight on stage there. And he says, I think we've had enough of this. Let's go backstage and play. P.C. Sorkar is an interesting man. He was born Prodip Chandra P.C. Sarkar, S-A-R-C-A-R. And all he did was change the A to O, so Sarkar became Sorkar. And he thought this is how it should be, and he's out there working in street dress most of his time. He's got a small problem, and I don't want to beat this one to death, but there was then, and there is to this day, a caste problem in India. There are groups that just don't work, live, eat, particularly eat, together. And he's a Bengali. The Bengalis are now mostly from Bangladesh. But that's where he's born, that's where his son, Sorkar Jr., also P.C. Sorkar. They don't have a junior system in there. So you just take father's name completely, which ought to screw up the census magnificently, particularly if they're well known. In any event, he decides that he's going to put together a magic show, and John Booth and Jack Gwynn did a lot of work in India, and John Booth sees him work, and John Booth changes his entire life. And he says, young man, you're extremely clever, But you got to get out of street clothes and get back into national dress. Get the turban, get all the rest of it, and come out as the great Indian magician. Because let's face it, only three countries, to my knowledge, have ever owned a magician. That is to say, their salary came from the country. Keo in Russia, Silvan in Italy, and Sorcar in India. Each were government-owned. So, he puts on the costume, and we now invented TWGM. Anybody remember TWGM? The world's greatest magician, then, of course. And he was a marvel at what he could do in advertising. He should have been an advertising man. He was a fine magician. He was a better inventor, and he loved to share whatever he was doing. So he said, well, we do things differently than in the States, because I went to an SAM in Chicago, and I worked there, but none of my apparatus was allowed out of customs, so everybody lent me theirs, and I have never seen such awful apparatus in my life. And he says, now let me show you how it should be done.
It was heavy.
He takes me through the entire show and explains to me that, first of all, he has three units. Barnum and Bailey had two, a blue and a red. He had three. He had blue, red, and green. They are identical except for the last illusion. The executioner's dream, the hangman, was one of them. The vanishing car was the other one. And crushing the lady was the third. Otherwise, the entire show is replicated three times. Three orchestras, three sets of assistants on stage, three lighting crews. Complete three shows. All he does is leapfrog between them, and they go up and set one and two ahead. That's quite an operation, dear friends. And I began to realize that this TWGM horseshit may actually be something worth listening to. He then started to show me how his apparatus operated. He says, you know, very odd, you know, I had to solve this myself. We're back to Pavel. We were talking about Pavel earlier at the table. Pavel had never had any instruction in magic, so he solved how to do it himself. So did Sarkar. His vanishing automobile is completely different than anything Steinmeier ever thought of. And it worked beautifully. He had the best black art act I've ever seen. And the best floating lady. And the lady sitting on a bench, on a rug, with her legs out in front of her, sitting upright, floating across the stage, a black art stage. Gorgeous, because she's wearing black tights and walking across the stage to a set of phony legs in front of her torso on the carpet. Sorcar has some great solutions to whatever he did. There is a book called Sorcar Magic, written in 1960. Go see if Andy Grigette's got a copy. It has every one of the things he ever invented explained in the book. The damn thing is that thick. And if you haven't seen it, you should. The best thing I saw him do in the show, he loved to do sightless vision, so they put the blindfold on and all the rest, and he had a blackboard that was only about that tall, sat on an easel, he stood behind it, and wrote upside down and backwards anything that you had written upon it in front. And that was the high point of the act as far as I'm concerned. And the high point of my 30 minutes has just ended. I thank you for listening. It's been fun to do it. Let's go watch some magic.
For more content, including pictures of those I spoke with in this podcast, commentary, links, timestamps, show notes, and more, be sure to visit the webpage at themagicwordpodcast.com. And you can help spread the word by liking the Magic Word Podcast on Facebook and sharing with your friends. Thanks for your support, and thanks for listening. Till next time, Scotty out.